What an honor to be here again tonight. It is truly my joy to be able to share another portion of our God's Word with you all. If you are visiting us, we thank you. Thank you for being here. We hope that you are going to stay for a few minutes so we can continue to talk. And any questions you may have about what we're seeing tonight or about your salvation, we implore you, please don't go home. We would love to engage in a conversation. If you have to go tonight, maybe we can meet some other day, some other time. But we'd like to see and ask, what does the Bible say about these questions that you may or may not have? So again, thank you for being here tonight with us. So what have we been studying these past couple of weeks on Wednesday nights? Proverbs, very good. And where are we currently in the book of Proverbs? Chapter 10, right? Verse what again? Verse 15? Verse 11, very good. We're almost to 15, right? Verse 11. Okay, so what have we been able to see so far in verses 6 through 10? Now remember, Proverbs, right? So who remembers what is the focus of this section of Proverbs in chapters, verses 6 through 11, or through 15, through 14, I'm sorry. Very good. So we're talking about how, right, wise communication can build up or heal, right, those around us or ourselves, and how unwise or idle talk, foolish talk, can destroy or burn down ourselves or those around us. So verses 6 through 10, right, we see how it personally affects either the wise or the fool, right? But how in verses 11 through 14, the effects outwardly, right? Or society, those around us. Now in verse 11, where we left off last week, and we've been drawing the parallel between this section and what other New Testament book? James chapter 3, right? We've been drawing these parallels between James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. And verse 11 of Proverbs 6 reads, or Proverbs 10, excuse me, reads, "The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked." Right? Violence covers the mouth of the wicked. So what we're seeing there is the power, right, to either restore or destroy of the tongue. And in James chapter 3, if someone can help us read verses 6 through 8, there, right, we see just how mighty the tongue can be. With it, we can either tame the beasts of the field, we can tame animals, we can even tame ourselves, or with it, we can destroy, we can tear down, right? Someone has James chapter 3, verse 6 through 8. Yes, sir. So, notice, right, there in James chapter 3, verses 6 through 8, it talks about the power, right, of the tongue. And the tongue, meaning our words, how we speak, how we communicate, not just what we speak, but how we do it, the intentions behind it, the attitude, the emotion with which we speak. It can either build up or it can tear down, right? With it, we can tame animals. Once again, pay attention to the fact that he tells us this. It shows us just how powerful our words are. We can tame animals. We can train them. We can make sure that they listen to our voice and understand. It's fascinating because we remember, or rather remember, that animals do not reason, do they? Animals don't have the reasoning capability that we do. Yet, how is it possible that, say, for example, a dog can understand, sit, and it'll sit? How is it possible that an animal, right, understands when we are angry at it and we speak to it in a harsh tone? They can't process those words the way a human being does, but yet that animal can tell, right, by the inflection of our voice. They can tell, right, by the tone of our voice, if we are speaking kindly to it and lovingly and gently, or if we're being harshly and we're menacing, presenting a threat. So it's not just the words that we use. It has to do a lot with how we speak, right? The emotion that we put into them, the attitude, the intentions behind our words. Have you guys seen those new progressive commercials, the progressive-aggressive way that they've been playing on the word of passive-aggressiveness, right? What is passive-aggressiveness, Sister Lucy? So it's a backhanded comment, right? Okay, down here in Texas, and I don't know if this is true all south, we're known for the expression of, bless your heart, right? That's actually a backhanded compliment. It's actually a passive-aggressive statement. Because even though we're saying, bless your heart, it's a veiled insult, isn't it? It's an insult where we are indirectly calling that person either ignorant, or we're calling them, you know, that they're worthy of pity, or they're worthy of our pity, because usually it is followed by something that they didn't know that is common knowledge, right? Oh, you've never had ice cream? Bless your heart, right? Passive aggressiveness can be destructive. It can be destructive. It isn't productive. You see that? So when we look at verse 11, things like this, examples such as passive aggressiveness, irony, sarcasm, right? Sometimes we joke the truth. That's another form of being destructive instead of constructive. Because indirect conversations are not always helpful. Now, sometimes they can be, right? If used correctly. Our Lord Jesus Christ never directly answered the questions that they were used to tempt him, did he? He would always use a question to answer their question to try to help them find the answer on their own. We see that the book of Revelation is shrouded in symbolism. God there is speaking in an indirect way because of the fact that during that time, we know that God's people were under persecution, and there were enemies who would have probably destroyed any information that was meant to encourage the faithful that were living at that time. So there is a way to use these instruments. The Apostle Paul uses hyperboles, doesn't he? The Apostle Paul even uses sarcasm as well. Let me give you an example of irony or sarcasm that Paul uses. Go with me to Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1. Paul himself reveals to us that he is using sarcasm when he says the following. Chapter 1, verse 6 and verse 7. Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 and verse 7. Pay attention to the irony or the sarcasm that the apostle uses. I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another. But there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. You see the sarcasm he's using there? Number one, he's not marveling. He's using this expression to make them see the foolish actions that they're embarking on. Why? Because number two, oh, there's a different gospel now. So, oh, there's another gospel, because clearly this is what you're believing. Clearly this is what you're turning to. But then verse 7, Paul unmasks his sarcasm, doesn't he? Not that there's another gospel. But there are some of you who trouble you. You see, he's showing them, look, this hypocrisy, this mask that they're using, this is what they're doing. They're leaning you off a cliff. They're playing on your emotions. They're making you believe that what they have is true. And they've fooled you, or you've allowed yourself to be fooled to actually believe there's a different gospel. No, there isn't. You've always known that there's only one. So why are you now wanting to believe that there's two or more? So there's a time and there's a place for it, right? There's a way in which it can be done godly. But when we go back to Proverbs chapter 10, look at verse 12. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. You see, the tongue reveals all intentions. Hatred stirs up strife. There can be veiled hatred, right? The book of Proverbs, you're going to read another proverb where it talks about that, you know, open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Hatred isn't always linear. Hatred isn't always direct. You know, there's backbiting. There's murmuring, there's gossip. But whatever form of hatred, as it pertains to how we communicate and what we communicate, hypocrisy, flattery, the Bible says it stirs up strife. It will cause or it will provoke problems. It will create a dissension or a schism among those who are connected through those types of communications or those circles of a fellowship with one another, right? This is one of the reasons why we have to be careful when we speak about one another. We have to be careful when we are perhaps venting to each other. Because the purpose, right, is to go and solve the problem with the person that we have the contention with. The intent is to gain a brother, not push him away. Criticism can be destructive, but criticism can also be constructive. But criticism is constructive when we tell the person we are providing it to, and our tongue reveals that the intention is to assist, not to discourage. Adam, you had to raise your hand. Very good. Absalom, right? That's actually an excellent example of what we're seeing there in Proverbs 10:12. What did Absalom do? How did he take over the kingdom? Where did he stand? He stood at the gate. To whom did he speak? To the people of Israel. And what was he providing for them? Not what they wanted. He was giving them what? Judgment. Wait a minute, how is that wrong? It wasn't yet his place. He was usurping his father's throne already. The intention of Absalom is to win, or as that section that Adam is referring to, was to steal the hearts of Israel, which he did. He charmed them. He charmed them, he won them over, and what he was able to successfully accomplish was make the people of Israel fall in love with him and reject and hate their current king. What do politicians do today in our country? Doesn't matter who's in office. The one trying to take that office, what do they spend doing during that four-year term? Tearing down, but not only tearing down, also doing what? This is why I'll be a better leader. And this is why I will have our country better. Doesn't matter who's in office, right? There's always someone, there's always an Absalom that tries to stand at the gate and steal the hearts of Israel. Hatred stirs up strife. See, Absalom did this because he was angry and he blamed David for what his brother did to his sister, right? He blamed David for not being more stern or strict by punishing his half-brother for what he did of how he raped his own sister. He was right. But the way he went about it was wrong, wasn't it? You see, Absalom should have allowed God's justice and righteousness to take in place. But instead, he took matter into his own hands. Now, last night, we talked about something similar in our class, and we talked about the fact that sometimes our emotions can play on our reason. Because again, he was right. No one is denying that Absalom was wrong. But the way he went about it, he did it through hatred. He wasn't searching for justice for his sister. He was looking for vengeance. He was masking it as justice. And this is why when he puts himself in front of the people of Israel, he's exactly teaching them that. Look, I will actually make justice for you. My father, he's going to try to compromise. He's going to try to negotiate, and you may not even get what you're looking for. But when I'm king, I'm going to be a better judge. I'm going to be the judge for the people, and I'm going to rule with righteousness and faithfulness. My intentions as your ruler is to actually care about you. Again, modern day political ads, right? So notice how hatred stirs up strife. In James chapter 3, let's go there now. James chapter 3, verse 9, which is the parallel, right? Notice how a man who speaks with hatred will be deceptive even to his own self. James chapter 3, verse 9. With it, we bless our God and Father, and with it, we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Those who stir up strife through hatred, they try to justify, right? Absalom thought he was justified. Again, to Brother Kevin's statement, he was right. He was right. So Absalom believed that what he was doing in stealing the crown from his father was right. He was justified. Love covers a multitude of sins, says the other half of the proverb. Were the men of David right in encouraging him to kill Saul there at Engadi? Had David already been anointed king of Israel by God? Was it already said that he would rule Israel? Yes. So in that sense, his men were not wrong in saying, you're the king. God has chosen you to rule. Ah, but you're not understanding. How do I want to start my ruling? Do I want to begin my kingship through violence, through vengeance, and by dishonoring God's anointed? Absalom didn't think that, did he? Absalom simply saw that his father was a bad ruler, that his father was a bad father, and not only that, that he was a better suited candidate for the throne. But love covers a multitude of sins. Notice why David did not kill Saul, even though Saul's life was at his mercy. Because he was the Lord's anointed. I will spare your life because I love God. And in blessing and honoring my God, I will bless and honor you because you have been chosen to rule over us. I will respect your office, and I will respect you as God's choice. His love covered Saul's multitude of sins, didn't it? His compassion, because he was not deceived. He blessed God and therefore was able to bless Saul in the process. When we speak right with anger, when we speak right with a lot of resentment, when we have a grudge and we speak in ill of our brother or our sister, and then we say, but oh, may God bless their heart. We're deceived, right? Because how can I bless God and curse man who was created in the image of God? I love the Creator, but I hate His creation. How is that possible? Right? So When we look at this, we understand that our tongue, brethren, reveals our intentions. You know, if we truly are godly, then we will acknowledge, even if we're right, even if that person offended us, even if that sister spoke ill of us, even if what they did to us was hurtful to our reputation, like Jesus, our words will be, well, I pray that I have the opportunity to make this issue right. And I hope that God will soften their heart and open their eyes so that they will come around before it's eternally too late. I don't want to be avenged. I don't want to, you know, I don't want someone to come out and speak on my behalf, because God knows my heart. And I know my intentions, and I know whether I am guilty or not, right? If my conscience is clear, then my love, my compassion will cover the multitude of those sins. There's nothing wrong with feeling pity for someone. There's nothing wrong with lamenting. God felt sorry when he saw that man's imagination, says Genesis chapter 6, were continually evil. It hurt God in his heart to see his creation become so destructive. But when God sent forth the flood, it wasn't because of hatred. It was for love. He was purging this world. He was cleansing it, right? He was giving Noah and his children and their wives the opportunity to correct a wrong. So, as we go back to Proverbs chapter 10, notice now verse 13. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 13. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. What do we understand with this verse here? Wisdom. What does wisdom do? Or rather, let me ask this. Who is the rod for? For the one devoid of understanding, right? What's the purpose of a rod? Adam? Correction, right? Correction. What reveals the presence of a rod on our person? How do you know if someone was disciplined with the rod? Welts? Speaking from experience? Welts? I'm afraid to ask if they made you look for the switch or you made your children look for the switch. But I was actually made to do that, right? And I don't know about you, sister, but I would always try to look for the dry one, right? The one that would break, not knowing that my mom and my dad already had the backup one that was worse. But notice that the rod, its effects are seen, right, in the welts, in the marks. When we've seen that, right, the question usually is what did you do? Think about it now in terms of a greater scale, right? A person who comes with a black eye and is all bruised and battered. What happened? Oh, I was at the bar drinking last night. You had a bar fight? Yeah, I don't remember over what, but well, how do I know that that was a foolish decision? The black eye, the bruises, and then the lapse of memory. But yet, what will that person do again? They'll go back to the same place where they got that black eye, those bruises, and that lapse of memory. Go ahead, Brother Kevin. A dog returns to his vomit, right? The expression means we don't learn. We keep doing the same thing over and over. Pay attention to this. What verse 13 is saying is wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding. How do we determine who's wise? How do we determine a person? How can we tell who is wise among the people? Well, usually he's the one that everybody recommends for advice, isn't he? Or usually he's the one that everybody speaks, he or she, excuse me, is the one that everyone speaks highly about. Everyone respects that person. Everyone acknowledges that person's wisdom. And everyone wants to emulate and follow the example of that person. Because wisdom is found on their lips, isn't it? Whereas the fool, well, the person, right, who is constantly finding the rod for their back, like the mule, right? You know, in Spanish, you know, there are two words. There's burro, which means donkey, and then there's mula, which means mule. I sometimes heard mula, because apparently the mule is more stubborn than the donkey, right? You see, a donkey, you'll strike it, and the donkey will eventually move. A mule, the harder you strike it, the more it would throw itself on the ground, and it would resist the pain. It will fight it. This is what chapter 10, verse 13 is showing us, right? It reveals to us, it illuminates to us, right, the fruits that determine whether a man is wise of understanding or if a man is devoid of understanding, whether a person is reasonable or unreasonable, whether a person has common sense or if they have no common sense. That's what verse 13 is talking about. Go with me to James chapter 3 now, and someone please read verse 10. James chapter 3, verse 10. How can we tell who has their lips full of wisdom and who has, who is rather devoid of understanding, according to James 3:10? Well, a wise man understands that he's not about to curse what God has blessed. He understands that he cannot love God and hate his brother. John, in first letter of John, says, how can you love God whom you've never seen and hate your brother whom you see? That is a person devoid of understanding. God is love, says John again. Then how can I hate? Again, emotions get the best of us, don't they? But a person is irrational. A person is unreasonable when they don't temper their emotions, right? Yes, sometimes we're going to have those moments where our emotions are going to be stirred up. This is a life where that happens, right? And there are going to be moments where our emotions are going to overflood us. But this is when we have to begin to wisely learn how to bring them back, right? How to begin to calm our emotions, how to begin to slowly allow the peace of God that surpasses all understanding to take place. See, James, again, go to chapter 5, and notice what James does there in verse 13. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing psalms. Notice, two emotions. Sorrow and joy, right? Sorrow and joy. Suffering and joy. For both emotions that can be overwhelming sometimes, God gives us a way to regulate them, doesn't he? In a godly way. A man whose lips are full of wisdom will know to turn to God when anguish is at its most profound. Elijah prayed when he felt lonely. He felt destitute. When he felt as a failure, as a prophet, I am not greater than my fathers. He prayed and God answered. Jonah prayed. When Jonah came to reason, When Jonah, for that short, brief of span of time in which he was in the great fish's belly, his reason, right, made him understand the error of his ways. Jonah prayed from the depths of the ocean. And even from the deepest parts of the ocean, God heard Jonah's voice. If is anyone suffering, let him pray. He does not say, stop suffering. No, he says, regulate your sorrow by placing it upon God. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, right, tells us that we are to place our cares upon him because he cares for you. But joy can sometimes be a trigger, can it? A state of euphoria can sometimes make us forget our godliness. Sometimes great joy can make us devoid of understanding, right? We all of a sudden receive an inheritance, and I start making plans with that inheritance. I'm going to build a mansion this great, and I'm going to move to this neighborhood, and then I'm going to give this much to my children. Man, I'm never again going to have to work for a day of my life. Okay, but you forgot one important thing. What? Be grateful. Because that inheritance, you didn't earn it. It was given to you by the grace of God. What you should have started by saying is, thank you, O God Almighty, because you have deemed me fit to be a steward of this blessing. Please, Father, grant me wisdom so that I may be able to administer this in a way that honors you and provides for my family. Notice, it's a state of joy, right? Anyone would be joyful. But even in that state of joy, we cannot forget that it is God who gave it to us. Do you remember the warning that God gave the children of Israel in the book of Deuteronomy? Next quarter, we're going to be looking briefly at the book of Deuteronomy. And you're going to be hearing the word remember a lot during those next 3 months. Because that is the central idea of the book of Deuteronomy. Do not forget. Remember, remember, remember. And one of the things that God tells them is when you have gone to possess the land, when you have finished possessing the land, when you plant your vineyards, when you build your houses, when you sit down to eat, remember that you didn't build the houses, they were already built, that those vineyards were not, you didn't make them, they were already made because the Lord your God gave them to you. Remember, they were a gift. He gave them to you. He provided the victory for you. You did not do it from your own hand. Nebuchadnezzar forgot this lesson, didn't he? Even though Daniel gave him the warning, and even though Daniel gave him the interpretation of the dream that had stirred his sleep, Nebuchadnezzar, a year later, out of ecstasy, out of euphoria, out of joy, says, is this not the great Babylon that I built with my own hands? He was in joy. He was enjoying his kingdom. Remember that the Hanging Gardens of Babylon are considered as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Very likely, and this is Obed speculating, by the way, that's where Nebuchadnezzar found himself, enjoying those beautiful gardens that he had achieved by ruling and conquering. But what did he forget? You didn't build anything, Nebuchadnezzar. The God of heaven gave you that gift. If it was not his will, you would not be the ruler of this kingdom. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding. But a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. Our mouth would always get us in trouble. When we speak without thinking, when we don't know how to say the rightly fitted word, we're always going to get in trouble. It's always going to end up badly for us. That's what that passage is saying. The wise man knows how to speak in a way where he will calm the situation. The wise man knows how to say the right words that need to be heard in the moment, how to say them, and the intention behind them. But a person who doesn't think, that's what it means to be devoid of understanding. Someone who just goes. Someone doesn't stop themselves and just lets the word vomit come out, right? Their words, their mouth, will always lead to correction. It will always lead to some kind of turmoil or turbulence in their problems, right? Even if they're joking. You know, even if they're making a joke that is done at the wrong time in the wrong form, can get us in trouble. Well, I wasn't trying to hurt anybody, but you did. You should have thought about that more carefully before you said it. You were insensitive. You were devoid of understanding. And hence why now the rod is being applied to your back. So we have one more verse and then we will end next Wednesday. But because our time is up, we will close our class tonight. Thank you all who are here for your attention and for your participation. Let's have a word of prayer and then we will be dismissed.